Hello, Roz.
Hello.
Now, as far as human instincts go at work, what's one example of a human instinct that kicks in?
Well, there's a couple that spring to mind immediately. There's emotion before reason and first impressions to classify. And what happens there is that people, we make up our minds really quickly about something. The research tells us within 2 seconds. So within 2 seconds, we're sizing somebody up and looking at them and saying, is this person like me or not like me? Do I like them? Do I not like them? It's very binary, that classification. So when you look at recruitment, for example, what happens is when you go to meet the person at the front desk to take them into the interview room, you've already decided if you want to work with them or not. And then everything that happens from there is just you backing up what you've already decided to do. Really interesting.
Is that where the argument for quotas come in?
Potentially, yes. And I actually did a keynote recently on unconscious bias, and that was something that we talked about a fair bit about. You know, we tend to engage people, employ people who are like us. You know, and it's unconscious. What we do is, just say, for example, you have a choice between two people who are equally capable of doing the job. You tend to choose the person who you like. And the reason you like them is probably because they're like you. You know, similar background, similar outlook, that sort of thing. And that's fantastic for a dinner party, but maybe not so great at work.
Have you had any exposure to blind recruiting?
I haven't personally, but I have heard quite a fair bit about it. And there's certainly an argument at the moment that goes for taking off names, sex, dates of birth and things from resumes, because there does seem to be a very strong bias towards people, for example, with non-English speaking background style surnames, being far less likely to work their way through a recruitment process than someone with a name like Smith. So, yeah, a lot of research that backs that up.
What about the sense of belonging, even at work?
That's actually a really important instinct, and it's probably one of our most critical ones, is that we have this, where human instincts comes from is the idea that for hundreds of thousands of years we've existed in our ancestral setting. We lived in villages, we worked together with our families, we essentially cooperated in tribes. And in the last 250 years, we've taken ourselves out of the tribal setting and into the Industrial Revolution, where we leave our home and our tribe and we go and work in workplaces. But we still have that instinct, that need to bond. And how we bond is we bond in family groups of seven's ideal plus or minus two. So your ideal team size is that 5 to 9. Our tribal size is anywhere between 80 and 150. So once your business gets bigger than about 100 people, you start to lose that sense of belonging and that sense of family.
How interesting. Is it possible to work against instincts like that when they do kick in, especially as far as first impressions go?
Look, people have tried. Let's just say there's a lot of, particularly around businesses, we look at silo behaviour in businesses. You know, we always behave in silos. We have hierarchies. There's been a lot of work done to try and combat that. But at the end of the day, it just doesn't work. And certainly around first impressions to classify and the emotion before reason, a lot of that is about being really aware of your own unconscious biases and deliberately making choices to do something that's against that. It can be overcome, but it's really hard. You've really got to be aware of it.
Okay, so once you realise it is possible to then start making decisions beyond just that impulse.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, part of that is around when you look at diversity in businesses, part of what actually overcomes that unconscious bias is exposure to the things that you're biased against or the people you're biased against.
Because then they're not other anymore. They're
exactly.
Part of the familiar
part
that
the
feels
tribe.
Like you. Interesting.
Part of the tribe. Yeah.
This is Roz Cardinal on ABC Local Radio Tasmania. What about the idea of confidence before reason? What's that?
Look, it's another interesting human instinct, and it's a survival instinct. We had to be in the old days confident about life or we would never have come out of our cave. So what happens there is we do tend to see people, we do things often that fly in the face of reason. And a really good example of that is, I don't know if you watch some of the air crash investigation shows about, you know, airline crashes. And what happens there is often the pilots are flying in the face literally of alarms going off saying pull up, terrain, and they continue to just go, hey, look, we don't understand what's going on. It looks like everything's okay. And there was a great example of somebody overcoming that was, do you remember the plane that had to crash land on the Hudson River in New York?
Oh, yes, yeah.
Yeah, and that was a captain who actually was very aware of that, you know, confidence before realism. And, I don't know if you remember the story, but they hit a flock of Canada geese and the engines cut out at, I forget what it was, maybe 6,000 feet. And he basically glided it in. And he had air traffic controllers from two airports saying, turn back, you can make it. We've cleared the runway. We've cleared the airspace. You can get back. But he knew he wasn't going to be able to do it. And that was him, you know, he said afterwards he had to really overcome that, you know, people telling him do this, and the confidence which said you can make it, and realising he wasn't. And in fact, you know, I've got a brother-in-law who's a pilot, and he told me that water landing is incredibly difficult. So at the time, that captain would have thought he was flying to his death. and he did it because he realised that turning back meant, you know, catastrophe. He would have crashed into the building.
I've heard that when you can feel like your senses are telling you you're flying flat, but the instruments are telling you you're nosediving. Mm. You are nosediving, and you need to trust the instruments. But for some reason, we trust our senses.
Yeah, we do. We think we're really clever, and we think that it's what's happening around us isn't real. And it's a really interesting one, and one that you again need to be really aware of, because it can put us into very dangerous situations.
How does that work in other workplaces, in a less extreme example?
You quite often see that in businesses where, for example, you know, they're heading towards some kind of major catastrophe that in hindsight everyone goes, how did they not see that coming?
Oh.
So you know, there's been several examples of things like oil rig explosions where people have been saying, you know, the technicians have been saying, we think we've got a problem. And people more senior have been saying, no, we think this is fine. It's all good. Let's just keep doing what we're doing. So it's, you know, it's sort of about the pressure of deadlines and the expectations of senior people and what are they going to think if we pull the pin on this project right now. So we have a tendency to kind of override the gut instinct that says this is not okay.
So how do you manage that? How do you work against that in a workplace?
Well, again, it's cultural too. You do see going back to air crashes, a lot of the time you do see or you hear on the recordings co-pilots who sort of said, hey, Captain, I think there's a problem. And the captain's gone, no, everything's okay. And the co-pilot shuts down and doesn't say anything further. And that's about the culture, you know, making it okay for people lower down the ranks to talk about things, to openly raise issues, to say, hey, look, I don't think this is right. I think we're making a mistake, without the consequences that tend to come with that.
Interesting. So being open to opinions and input.
And again, it's the diversity, isn't it? Listening to voices that are not like us.
Very interesting. Is there one more you could tell us about?
Loss aversion is a classic one. Getting back to change, which is one of my key subjects.
Loss aversion.
Loss aversion. You know, it's not that we hate change. What we're tracking for is we don't like loss. So when we're exposed to a change, if we think we're going to lose something, we'll reject the change. If we think we're going to gain something, we'll support it. And if we don't know, we resist the change until we have enough information to make our minds up. Loss aversion is a really powerful instinct in people.
How does it play out in the workplace?
When a change is announced, the first thing we're doing is, what's going to happen to me? Is this for me or against me? Is it going to, you know, be to my benefit or not? And if we don't know, you know, and it happens in organisations, you know, when a change happens, communication can be quite slow to trickle down. And in the meantime, people are immediately resisting change just because they don't know what it means.
Interesting. Mm. All right. So if awareness is the first step towards managing this stuff, we've got a few we can carry into the workplace today. Thank you very
Absolutely.
Much, Roz.
Pleasure.
Roz Cardinal. Of Shaping Change on your afternoon on ABC Local Radio Tasmania.